Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We've got a really interesting stack of research on the table today, and it covers something that I think 99% of us look at every single day.
Oh, yeah.
Usually for, 8 to 10 hours at a time, but we almost never actually see it.
It's the classic fish and water problem, right? You're swimming in it, so you just don't notice the water.
Exactly. We are talking about the operating system, the OS, and I think for most people, the mental image is just a logo.
Right.
You picture the Windows flag or, the bit in Apple, and that's about as deep as it goes. But looking through these notes, the reality is so much messier and honestly more fascinating than just Mac versus PC.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. It is not just about branding or which camp you're in.
Yeah.
If you're a learner and maybe you're prepping for a certification like CompTIA plus I, or you're just trying to figure out why your IT department is forcing an update on you,
yeah,
you have to look under the hood.
Yeah.
The OS isn't just a screen. It's a dictator.
A dictator. That's a strong word.
In a technical sense, yeah. It dictates everything. It's the invisible management layer that tells the hardware, the plastic, the silicon, the glass, exactly what it's allowed to do and when it's allowed to do it.
Without it, your $1,000 laptop is just a paperweight.
A very expensive paperweight, exactly.
So that's our mission today. We're going to try to categorize this chaos. We need to sort these systems into buckets we can actually understand. And then, and this part I found really surprising, we need to talk about their mortality.
The life cycle.
Right, from birth to death. Because apparently, operating systems die, and when they do, things get dangerous.
They do. Using a dead OS is like living in a house with no locks in a bad neighborhood. But we'll get to the scary stuff later. We have to start with the landscape.
The buckets. Okay, the research suggests there are four main categories, and I want to start with the two that get confused the most. Server and workstation. To the average person, a computer is a computer. What's the actual difference?
It all comes down to priority. Who is the computer trying to please?
Okay, let's unpack that.
So, take a workstation OS first. That's your Windows 11, your Mac OS, the stuff we use every day. Its priority is you.
The person in the chair.
The person in the chair. It's optimized for foreground processes. It spends its resources on the graphical user interface, the GI, making sure that when you move your mouse, the cursor moves instantly. It's designed for human interaction.
So it's trying to be a good host.
Exactly. Now, flip that for a server OS. A server OS doesn't care about you. It doesn't care if the interface is pretty. In fact, a lot of server OSs don't even have a graphical interface.
They're just a command line.
Just a command line. Because nobody is sitting in front of them. Their priority is background processes. They're optimized to serve data to other computers, not to a human.
So it's like, the workstation is the waiter trying to make the customer happy with a smile.
And the server is the chef in the back. It's loud, it's industrial, and it's focused purely on output and throughput.
That makes perfect sense. But I found a detail in the notes that blurs this line, and it feels like a classic tech exam question. I can share files from my Windows laptop. I can create a shared folder right now. So isn't that making my laptop a server?
Technically, yes, you're performing a server function. But, and this is the gotcha, workstation operating systems have a hard limit.
Oh, really?
On a standard version of Windows, you were usually capped at 10 concurrent users for background sharing.
Only 10.
That's it. Microsoft draws a hard line in the sand. If you have an office with, say, 20 people, and you try to use someone's desktop PC as the file server, the 11th person is going to get an error message.
Ah.
It's their way of saying, if you want to run a business, by the server OS.
So it's not a hardware limit, it's a software license limit. It's designed to force you into the right bucket.
Precisely. You need the chef for the banquet, not the waiter.
Okay, so we have the waiter workstation and the chef server. Bucket number three is mobile.
Which is pretty self-explanatory, right? We're talking phones, tablets, smartwatches.
Yeah.
The defining characteristic here is usually the input method touch and the process management.
Yeah.
Historically, mobile OSs were single task.
You do one thing at a time.
One thing at a time. Although my new iPad would argue with that. I could have like three things open now.
Yeah, the lines are getting blurrier, for sure.
For sure. But fundamentally, a mobile OS architecture assumes the device is on a battery, has limited thermal headroom, and it needs to be really aggressive about killing background tasks to save power. A desktop just doesn't worry about that as much.
True. And then we have the fourth bucket. The new kid on the block. Cloud-based.
This is the real game changer. The term we use here is stateless.
Stateless. Okay, we are going to come back to that word a lot because it feels like a huge philosophical shift. But in simple terms, for an OS, what does that mean?
It means the operating system is just a shell. The state, your data, your settings, your personality, it doesn't live on the device. It lives on a server somewhere else. The best example is Chrome OS.
The Chrome.
Right. If you hand me your Windows laptop and I drop it in a river.
Please don't. I have photos on there I haven't backed up.
Exactly. You'd be devastated. You'd lose files, photos, applications. But if you hand me a Chromebook and I drop it in a river, you'd be annoyed that you have to buy a new machine, but you wouldn't lose a single byte of data.
I just buy a new one, log in.
And you are exactly where you left off. The device is disposable.
That is a powerful concept. So server, workstation, mobile, and cloud. Now that we have the map, let's take a tour. Who owns these territories?
Well, you have to start with the giant, Microsoft Windows.
The dominance is just wild.
It's the standard for business and personal use globally. We're currently on Windows 11. Fits squarely in that workstation bucket, though it has Surfer versions, too. It's the jack of all trades.
And then it's, I guess, aesthetic opposite, Apple.
Apple is fascinating because they control the whole widget, hardware and software. They don't license their OS to Dell or HP.
I loved the naming trivia in the notes. I feel like I lived through this but didn't realize it was a full circle.
It is a total loop. In the 80s, it was System 1, then eventually Mac OS. Then in 1999, they did this massive rebuild based on UNIX and called it Mac OS X.
The 10.
Right, 10. And they kept that branding for 15 years. And now, they just dropped the X. It's Mac OS again.
Time is a flat circle.
But under the hood, Mac OS is a workstation OS, just like Windows. It's all about that foreground user experience.
Okay, now let's talk about the one that makes people sound really smart at parties. Linux.
The power user's choice.
The story here is great. It starts with a guy, Linus Torvalds, back in 91. And he wasn't even trying to change the world. He was just trying to copy something called Mannix.
Mannix. Sex, yeah. It's a mini Unix used in universities, you know, for teaching. Linus wanted something he could use and modify freely. And that's the key word, free.
Open source.
Right. But we have to be careful with our terms here, because this is where people get confused. Linux technically refers to just the kernel.
Okay, explain the kernel, like in plain English.
Think of the kernel as the engine of a car. It's the essential machinery that makes the wheels turn and the gas burn. Linus built the engine, but you can't drive an engine down the highway.
You need seats, a steering wheel, a paint job.
And those are the distributions.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because the kernel is free, anyone can build a car around it. So you get companies like Red Hat or organizations like Debian building their own cars using the Linux engine.
And that's why you hear about Ubuntu, Fedora, CentOS.
They're all Linux, but they're different flavors customized for different users. And because of that flexibility, Linux is just, it's a chameleon. It's everywhere.
It can be a workstation or a server.
It runs most of the world's servers. It runs supercomputers. But you can also just install it on your laptop and use it like Windows. It kind of defies the buckets.
Speaking of defying buckets, or maybe crashing into them,
yeah.
We have to talk about Microsoft's mobile journey. It's
yeah.
It's tragic, right? Is that too strong a word?
Turbulent is polite. Catastrophic might be more accurate in terms of market share.
I actually had a Windows phone for a bit, the tiles.
The interface was really distinct, that Windows 8 style. Microsoft bought Nokia in 2013, spent billions trying to make Windows Phone a thing. They wanted a third pillar against Apple and Google.
But it just... it failed. Why?
The app gap. Nobody built apps for it because nobody bought the phones, and nobody bought the phones because there were no apps. A classic vicious cycle. They finally killed it in 2019.
But, and this is the twist that I love, Microsoft is still making phones.
The Surface Duo.
But it doesn't run Windows.
Nope. Microsoft swallowed their pride. The Surface Duo runs Android. It's Microsoft hardware running Google software. That tells you everything you need to know about who won the mobile OS war.
It really does. But wait, we should clarify because the Surface brand is confusing. There's the Surface Duo, the phone, and the Surface tablet.
Yes, very different beasts. The Surface tablet, which launched way back in 2012, runs a full version of Windows.
So that's a workstation.
That's our workstation. They're mostly Intel-based now, competing with Ultrabooks. So a Surface Pro is a workstation. A Surface Duo is a mobile Android device.
Got it. Which brings us to the winners. Android and iOS.
Android is Google's child. Started in 2008 with HTC. It's open, sort of,
yeah.
Which lets companies like Samsung and Motorola use it. But the real secret sauce isn't even the OS. It's the store.
The Play Store.
Exactly. An OS without an ecosystem is a ghost town. That's why Windows Phone died. Android and iOS won because they became the gatekeepers to the apps.
And iOS, of course, is Apple's walled garden.
Yep. Launched in 2007, originally just called iPhone OS, it's the gold standard for optimization because Apple controls the chip and the code from top to bottom.
But there was a fork in the road recently with the iPad. I hadn't really tracked this change.
It's a big deal. For a long time, the iPad just ran a big version of the iPhone's software. But in 2019, they split it off into iPadOS.
Why?
Because they want the iPad to replace your laptop. iPadOS introduced better multitasking, file management, mouse support. They're trying to bridge that gap between mobile and workstation. They want the iPad to be your main computer.
Which brings us right back to that stateless idea. We said Chrome OS was the ultimate cloud system, but the research points out something really interesting. Windows and Mac are starting to copy Chrome.
This is the stateless revolution. It's happening everywhere.
How so? Because Windows still feels pretty heavy. It takes up a lot of space on my drive.
It does, but think about how it's managed, especially in a corporate environment.
Mm-hmm.
In the old days, like Windows XP, if your work laptop blue screened, it was a crisis.
Oh, I remember. The IT guy had to come re-image the machine.
Right. It would take 4 hours. They had to reinstall Windows, find drivers, hopefully find your lost files on some backup tape. Now we have MDM mobile device management, tools like Microsoft Intune.
Okay.
If you break your work laptop today, IT just hands you a shrink-wrapped box off the shelf. You turn it on, signing with your email, and the cloud takes over.
And it just pushes everything down to you.
And installs your apps, applies your security policies, connects your email, syncs your files from OneDrive. Within 20 minutes, that generic laptop has morphed into your laptop.
So the hardware has become a generic vessel.
Exactly. We're treating Windows laptops like iPhones.
Mm-hmm.
The device doesn't matter. The cloud profile matters. That is stateless computing conquering the legacy systems.
That is incredibly convenient, but it also puts a huge amount of pressure on the software being secure. Which leads us to the final part of our mission, the life cycle.
The part that keeps security officers awake at night.
We talked about birth and death. Let's skip to the end first. End of life. EOL.
EOL. Sounds dramatic, but it is.
When a vendor says an OS is end of life, the computer doesn't stop working, right? It'll still turn on.
It runs perfectly fine, and that's the trap.
So why is it so dangerous?
Because the vendor stops sending out the police. When an OS is supported, if hackers find a hole or vulnerability, Microsoft or Apple writes a patch to close it, they send you an update.
Okay.
When an OS is EOL, they stop looking. The hole stays open forever.
And the hackers know it.
Oh, they know it. They actively hunt for networks running EOL software like Windows 7 or even XP because they know those doors are unlocked and no one is coming to fix them.
So for a company, running an EOL operating system is basically negligence.
It voids support contracts, it fails compliance audits, and it's a massive, massive security risk.
So how do IT departments manage this? I mean, upgrading thousands of machines every couple of years must be expensive and disruptive.
It is, which is why you see the skipping strategy.
The skipping strategy.
It's this fascinating trend. Think about the history of Windows. Windows XP was beloved. Everyone stayed on it for years.
Mm-hmm.
Then came Windows Vista.
Which everyone hated.
It was heavy, buggy, slow. So what did corporate IT do? They just skipped it. They stayed on XP until Windows 7 came out, which was good.
And then Windows 8 happened.
Same thing. No start menu. These confusing tiles. Skip, wait for Windows 10.
So the pattern is like good, bad, good, bad.
It's almost a superstition in IT at this point. You wait for the stable release. And admins lean heavily on something called downgrade rights.
What are downgrade rights?
When you buy a new computer from Dell or HP, it comes with a license for the newest Windows. But that license often includes the legal right to install the older version instead.
Ah, okay.
So you buy a Windows 11 machine today, but you can wipe it and install Windows 10 because that's what your company trusts. It buys you time.
That is a pro tip. Before we wrap up, I just want to clarify the terminology for the beginning of the life cycle. We see these words thrown around, alpha, beta, release candidate. What's the actual progression?
It's the stages of polish. Alpha is the rough draft. It's often missing features. It crashes constantly. You usually only see alpha versions in open source projects. Microsoft rarely lets the public see an alpha.
It's too ugly.
It's too ugly. Then you get beta. Beta is feature complete, usually. But it's buggy. This is the public beta phase where they ask users to opt in and report bugs.
You're volunteering to be a guinea pig.
Pretty much. Then you get the release candidate, or RC. This is the polish phase. The code is basically done. Unless something catastrophic is found, this is the version that's going to ship.
And then it goes to RTM release to manufacturing.
Correct. And then the clock starts ticking
Yeah.
all the way to end of life.
And the support phases degrade over time too, right? From mainstream to extended.
Yep, you start with mainstream support, you get new cool features and security fixes, then you drop to extended support, or LTS, long-term support, no new features, just critical security patches. And finally,
Darkness.
silence.
This has been a great tour. We've gone from the server room to the cloud, from Linus Torvalds to the Surface Duo. If you, the listener, take one thing away from this deep dive, what should it be?
I think it's about intentionality.
How so?
Whether you're an IT pro or you're just buying a laptop for your kid, you need to know what you're buying into. Are you buying a walled garden like iOS? Are you buying a stateless device like a Chromebook? And most importantly, where is it in its life cycle?
Right.
Buying a used computer that's about to go end of life is like buying expired milk. It might look okay, but it is going to make you sick.
That is a great analogy. It's basically consumer protection for your digital life.
100%.
I want to leave everyone with a thought that really stuck with me from our stateless section. We're moving toward a world where the operating system is less about the machine in your hand and more about the cloud account you sign into.
The device is just a piece of glass.
Right. So, are we approaching a future where the hardware doesn't matter at all? Where any screen you walk past, your TV, your car dashboard, your fridge, could instantly become your computer just by looking at it?
Biometric login to a universal cloud OS.
Exactly. If the OS is invisible, maybe the computer should be too. Something to think about the next time you're waiting for a Windows update. Thanks for diving in with us.
Always a pleasure.